Hello and welcome to Walking the BJJ Gauntlet, the wildly infrequent podcast that seeks to prize various truths about jiu-jitsu from the sport's great practitioners. My name is Derek Riley, blue belt, no stripes, no pizzazz, and my co-interlocutors are black belt John Walton and brown bear Trey Pittman. We're interviewing the black belt superstar Charles Negromonte, described by BJJ heroes as one of the top medium heavyweight competitors of his generation. Charles wins pretty much everything he touches, has spent years training with Hodger Gracie, and teaches here at SJJ Zetland every Tuesday and Thursday nights, 6 p.m. in the gi, 7 p.m. no gi. Hello, Charles, and where you been?
Yeah, I've been traveling for 3 months. I stayed 1 month in Brazil. I went there to do two tournaments, as well to see family, and then spent some time in London with my friends, where the academy I used to teach, and Hodger Gracie Academy, and as well, I did one tournament there, so. Yeah, I had a lot of fun.
So what was the tournament you did?
I did the London Open, the local one.
How'd you go?
I managed to win my division, and I got second in the absolute.
Wow. In the final. What was your division?
It was heavyweight division. Yeah.
Was that 99 kilos?
Was 90.
90?
91, yeah.
Who did you fight in the absolute?
In the absolute, I fought a couple guys that I never seen before. I mean, one guy, he's from Checkmate. Can't really recognize his name. I know his nickname is Carrot.
So he's redhead.
He's from, yeah.
Blood nut.
I've never seen a redheaded person. Did
we,
you?
We fought. Yeah, we fought twice before, and then I beat him in a very short score twice, and this time I managed to submit him from the mount position. So it was quite good. He got really, a little bit upset, and in the final of the absolute, I fought Adam Vajiskin, quite well known. I reckon he's the best. The best European fighter currently, and
was no gi.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
And then the score was pretty tight, but he beat me by one advantage.
So backtracking to the previous one, when you submitted the guy from mount, what was the submission?
The submission was arm triangle from mount position.
And how did he express his dissatisfaction with it?
Well, because. When I went back to the warm-up area, and he came with his stuff, and then he just threw everything on the ground, and then he swear a little bit, and then he looked at me, and then, man, I can't believe he's 3-0, because I beat him like twice before, but was like very short, very like tight score, and then this time I think he wasn't expecting him for me to submit him, but I have been training a lot no gi, and then I think I surprised him.
Yeah. So how did you set it up? How did you set up the arm triangle?
The arm triangle. He got pretty flexible guard. I think 7 minutes to be able to get close to pass his guard. So the whole setup was trying to put a lot of volume on the passes to make him a little bit tired. And I got close once, and then I realized, okay, that's the way to go. And I keep persisting the same thing for around 7 to 8 minutes. And then I managed to get a good position on top and half guard, controlling the head. And when I got that position, I realized he was tired. So yeah, then
And how was your gas? Is it good?
Huh?
Your gas?
Yeah,
was
yeah.
Good?
I like I said, I this tour in Europe, I did a couple seminars there to make some cash. But the idea was mostly to get some good training. So I was training like twice a day after a long time. And then, at the beginning, I felt a little bit, being trained twice a day. That's how I felt my cardio, improving. And then that's what I used this on a London Open. Like, I tried to push the pace in all the fights. And then, I guess, the guy that we're talking about, I think I gassed him out a little bit, and I managed to get a good position, a mount. And then he was just drowning, and then I got the arm triangle.
When you got that super cardio, do you just see the guys, just see them gassing out in front of you? You just go, ha ha, I've nearly got you now. Yes, you just thrashing around.
Depends. It's like a shoot in the dark. You don't know if you're gonna push the pace and the guy gonna feel. But I believe position yourself in always in the position that you used to do, that your best positions. You're always gonna make the guy work hard because you're doing your best techniques all the time, so you make him recover the guard, really commit to do that. Otherwise, you're gonna be able to execute your technique. So I was just doing what I had to do, and then trusting that he was at some point he would gas out, and then he did. And then I managed to score.
And that's been pretty satisfying.
Yeah.
Just locking it in.
I feel I was discussing about this with a few friends the other day. Get to the point on a black belt level, on a high level. You know, everyone's pretty much the same. But whatever can impose yourself more, like put a lot of volume in the game, like has more chance to succeed. And so this London Open was, I learned a lesson winning and also losing the final of the absolute, because when I got in the final of the absolute, I save a lot of energy, half of the fight. And then when I start to push the pace on the other half, I didn't have enough time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, actually, I just pushed.
So you left it. You left it too late.
I pushed the pace right on the end. Like, I made a minute left. The guy was winning. Was 2-2, and then two advantage for him. One advantage for me. And then he scored another advantage. And then when I really I'm gonna give everything I got. I got a really good position, but the time finished.
Yeah.
So I realized why did I save, like, what I was confident on my fitness stuff, and then what was a lesson I learned.
So you felt like you had gas left in the tank after that?
And I just saved, maybe, I don't know why, maybe because I did one extra fight than Adam on the absolute. So I was, maybe I let this, like, I need to save half of the fight and the other half are going to start push slowly. But it was a mistake. I knew, after the fight, I realized now I should have imposed my game since the beginning of the fight. And then somehow I think I would be able to score the points that I... So pretty much on the last 30 seconds, I passed his guard and I was like with kind of armbar, but I wasn't decided between stabilize the side control and attack the arm. And then I went for the arm, so I sat on the ground, attacked the arm, so I didn't score the points for the pass because I attacked the arm. So the time finished. And then
would you have won if you had scored the points for the pass?
Huh?
Would you have won if you had...
Yeah, I would want.
Jeez.
Yeah. He's only an advantage up.
That's ruthless.
Yeah.
Does that haunt you at night?
Huh?
Does that haunt you at night?
What's that?
Give you bad dreams?
Yeah. maybe for 2 days. And man, I was like...
Did you swear and throw your stuff in the...
No.
Did you... obviously, you took out that Super Bowl. Did that give you a lot of confidence going into, going over to London and competing?
Yeah, definitely. It was like... After my knee injury, Boa was the first tournament that I managed to get a good result.
So what's the Boa tournament?
So the Boa tournament, I believe, is the biggest super show, like invitation only tournament here in Australia. They did a noogie this time. It was a 8-man tournament. So they invite the best heavyweights in the country. So guys like Bobby Farias, Bobby Farias, he just done the ADCC. He won the AA division. Lachlan
Hodgkinson.
Yeah, he's Lachlan's student. Like a pretty good names, like some top fights. Luckily I managed once again to impose my game after injury, and then build my confidence back to compete again, and then come up with a good result was a big thing for me. I'm sharing with you guys now. Like I never felt nervous before, like I felt in this tournament. I don't know why. I felt like I'm kind of anxious, like in another level that I never felt before. And I really trying to understand why is this happening, like. And I competed this year before, like before the bowl. I went to Abu Dhabi. I did a gi tournament. Got third place there. But this bowl challenge was like really put me in a place that I've never been before. But I just tried to shut down everything and just keep going. And as soon as when I shake my partner's hands, everything's gone.
Is that during that's because of how prestigious the award is, or do you think you're coming into it? Out of an injury, and also with that bowl, I think Bruno won the first one.
Yeah,
that was a gay one, Bruno.
Oh, okay,
yeah, it was a gay. I think it was an element of like the mixer of come from an injury. The tournament that I did previously before the Boa, I got third place. So it was a bit of pressure to win a tournament as well, you know, reinsurance if I still be able to win again.
At that high level.
Keep competing at a high level, yeah.
If the magic was still there?
Huh?
See if the magic was still there.
Yeah. The willpower is still, but I don't know, like, I mean, I'm not in my 20s anymore. I'm almost stepping the master two, so I was competing against adults again. I just wanted the reassurance that I still can do, you know, because I really want it. And then the day that I feel like I really want to do, but I can't do it, and I think it would be the time to stop competing in the adult division. But I think I still can do it for sure.
Yeah. And then, so you're in London and you're training at your old gym, Hodja Gracie's gym, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. The mat is always full of people, like, want to train hard there. So, yeah, like, I've just felt like in the old times, you know, like, always you look around, there's always someone really tough to train, including Roger as well. Roger, he retired, but he still have a lot of desire to be on the mat training, especially now with the hype of no-gi. He really want to, like, learn the new stuff as well. Like, you know, he's as well an ADCC champion. You know, he had been there before. So he's pretty excited to train no-gi now. And it was good to, you know, share those moments and then learn a lot as well, like, from.
I think everybody's wanted to know this for many years, and I think that we could probably put a lid on it tonight. And probably the whole of jiu-jitsu community is listening to this because it's so important. Is it Roger or Hodja?
Brazilian people, they say Hodja. And then everybody else, the other countries, they say Roger.
So what does he go at? Like, is he Roger? Does he call himself
Roger?
I don't know
how he introduced himself, like, honestly.
Huh?
Well,
I don't know if when you say, my name is Roger or Hodja.
Yeah.
So is it the R is pronounced with a H, correct?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Because the R in Brazil is sounds like a H for you guys, yeah.
And is Roger a normal Brazilian name, or is it a Western? That's why I think it's probably Roger.
Yeah, it's
right?
Pretty normal name.
Oh,
it's
is it?
Normal, yeah.
Okay, so it could be Hodja. So it really didn't. We haven't solved it today.
Yeah.
Sorry to all the listeners out there. Charles, and I've noticed training with you, and you're never not fit.
Never not fit.
Like, there's fit.
Right.
And then there's super fit. How do you maintain the rage all the time? Like, how do you stay that optimum level where a fat 50-year-old can't come in and give you a touch-up? You know, like, how do you do it? Are you just... But on a serious note, do you train every day? Do you try to train? Do you train twice a day? Do you do weights in the morning? Do you try to do jiu-jitsu every 6 days a week? How does it work for you?
Yeah, it's pretty much what, you know, what you said. And it's part of my job. I mean, it's part of my job being fit. You know, like, I do this full time. I would feel terrible about myself. No, I don't want to be the fittest guy in the world, but I would feel terrible. Like, I train with, like, those young guys, or go compete and then gas out. You know, it's my obligation to be fit all the time. If I want to do that, that's the first priority. Priority number one, and I'll be fit to be able to go head to head. You know, it's black belt adult division. It's 10 minutes rounds, like, and then you do a lot of rounds in one day. So, and when you do this full time, you're always thinking about that. You're always thinking about, I have to be strong, I need to be fit and eat well, and then everything has to be there. If one of those things is not there, you know, I start like, oh.
If you had a pie chart and you had to divide it up between fitness, technique, strength, I look at things like fitness, right? Mm. If you're not fit, you can't use any technique.
You can't use anything.
You know, like, yeah. You get someone who's super fit.
Yeah.
They're tough, regardless.
Exactly. Yeah.
So fitness, as I've got you know, develop my game. And I've worked out that fitness is like such a high priority.
One of the very first ones for sure. Because if you gas out, you become a gassing out. First minute, you're brown belt, and then you're purple belt, and then you see your white belt.
Like Muhammad Ali had a famous saying. He said, "Fitness makes a kid, like losing gas makes a coward out of any man." You know, like you're starting to get hit, and you're tired, and you start to, you know, it does.
Especially when you're talking about competing at a high level. Everyone's always working so hard to be as, you know, trying to win the match on the details, because everyone's super strong, everyone's super technical, everyone's super everything. So there's always the rooms for like ways to improve, you know, like, and then, but there's a basic things, the basic fundamental of like being fit, and then. And everyone does the same, you know, like, because one of those pillars, they're not there, you know, you're not even supposed to be competing at a high level.
That's right. No, it's, you know, I can only imagine how scary it'd be to do like a UFC fight or MMA.
Yeah.
Unfit. Yeah. You know, it would be terrifying to have to walk into that.
Yeah.
And, because you know you're going to get your head punched in properly, you know?
Yeah.
And those old school guys, when they first started doing it, you know, like Tank Abbott, and you know, that was fat, you know.
They used to go just to throw the big hand.
Yeah, and if you land one, you do. But that's why you got to admire these MMA guys now, mate.
Yeah,
they are phenomenally fit, like Olympian level.
Yeah,
you know, they got to be.
And they're doing it off the back of a crazy weight cut too.
Yeah, there's something very primeval about those guys, like not just the brutality of the fight, but the mental toughness, the, you know, to do that, but then to cut, then to the actual training that they have to do, because they've done it all off, out of the octagon, all the hard work's done, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Do you do much weight cutting before
you come, or? There's a few tournaments and that from the Abu Dhabi Federation I walk on my 90-91, but the division that I like to compete in, those Abu Dhabi Federations, 85, so I can cut 5 kilos of water not easily, but yeah, I can do it. Yeah. So early this year when I did in Abu Dhabi after my injury, my first big tournament, I went to Abu Dhabi and then I did my weight cut. Was so hard. I had someone to help me there, and I almost like couldn't do it. But yeah, fortunately I had someone like to help to keep pushing. Like, you gotta do it. I lost the condition to mentally to be in a sauna, you know, you know, get the card and scrape your body to take, you know, like it was really hard. And then
what's the card scraping your body thing?
It's you sweat a lot, and you get like any credit card, and you scrape the sweat, because it's the easier way to take the water from your body. Because if you let dry,
it's gonna stick, come back in you.
Come back, stay in your
all
body.
All that hard work.
Nah, you're good with the other card. Don't use the other
So this, you know, my friend here, you know, when I get stay like 10 minutes in the sauna, when I come out, he scrapes me with a card.
Jeez, you creepy motherfuckers, scraping each other with credit cards.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that the whole creepiness with jiu-jitsu is gone. Like, when I, I mean, years ago when I started, you know, you're in between someone's legs and you're that uncomfortable.
Mm.
And it's all that. Like, you don't even think about that.
No, you don't think. It's so weird. Even, you never think about that sort of stuff.
Never. You know, it's just, it's such familiarity, you know.
And outside of looking at it, goes, sort of, looks askance.
I think it's becoming very well known now. Like, you know, you used to say to someone you do jiu-jitsu and they go, you know, they can't even pronounce it like I couldn't then.
Yeah.
And now they know, it's the real deal, you know. And so that's a massive change.
Thanks
to
UFC, probably.
Yeah, UFC definitely had a massive, I think the way the structure, and I don't know whether it's come from the International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation, but it's actually such a popular sport in the fact that word of mouth. It's a massive way that parents tell other parents. It's so good for their kids.
Yeah.
So much about cop. And because it gives you this life skills to be able to defend yourself, you know where you are in a pecking order in a gym. Like, you actually know that you can actually do stuff. You know you can put someone on the ground at least. And I always say to people that come into me at the gym and say, little Johnny's getting picked on. I said, tell them to grab the kid and put it on the ground. And if he bullies him again, grab him, put him on the ground. And just keep doing it until he humiliates the kid.
Yeah.
The bully won't bully him ever again.
Yeah.
And it's worked. And it's such an important thing. And I always say, and we're getting on the track off Charles, but just about the whole thing about what we sell and what jiu-jitsu brings. Self-confidence, self-esteem, because you develop the tools to be able to build that and build on top of that. And that's what we sell. And martial arts is just the way we do it.
Yeah.
It's an amazing sport. And, you know, Charles is at the pinnacle and he's very lucky in that he's competing at such a high level. And he's a very, he's a great teacher and he's got a good manner. He's going to have a massive gym, whatever he does in the future. So he's sort of got that to fall back on, which is he's put all the hard work in. So it's a very positive environment to come in and open a gym, because there's going to be one on every block very soon, you know, and there's enough for everybody to actually go okay. And, to, you know, like, but it's, yeah, it's an amazing sport. And you know, Charles is lucky enough again to train with Roger and learn off the goat.
Yeah.
So what's it like training with Roger?
Huh?
What's it like sparring with Roger?
It's not fun. It's not fun at all. He's still, you know, he's still training hard every day. So he's not as fit like he used to, but he's still like a really tough trainer. And then every time, you know, every time I talk with the boys back in London, they always say like, currently champions, European champions. I will not mention name, but like guys.
Coming
guys, well, no, yeah, the young generation, they go that for visit, and then Roger's still like a, you know.
Is he 38, 40 yet? Is he 40 yet?
He's 41.
41.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
But the thing about, and this is, you know, I'm 51, the thing about it is, it's that sort of sport that as long as you keep yourself in some reasonable condition, I reckon you could do it till you're like 75.
Yeah,
honestly.
I think jiu-jitsu is the easiest sport on your body comparing to all the other ones. Like all the other grappling martial arts, they have throws, you know. Like when you get a certain age, you don't wanna it's hard people throw you, you know. So because jiu-jitsu, most of the fight is on the ground, is the easiest sport in your, you know. One example is Roger's father. Like Maurice is 70, he's still sparring like pretty much every day.
Does he really?
Yeah, he does.
Is he tough?
He's really mad.
He does instructionals with Roger too, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And then he comes from our old school.
But he's a very young at heart guy, right?
Huh?
Isn't his girlfriend like 30?
He's a young broad.
He's a guy with he's going through his marriage number 6.
Yeah,
he's
right.
A legend.
Cheers. Wow. His testosterone's all right.
I'm going to ring him up.
Roof of the top. he's even come from our old school generation. He really follows like what's going on in jiu-jitsu now.
Is he doing nagi?
No, not nagi.
You got pushing that.
But he's inspiring. Like see his training. Like sometimes I train with him a couple of times, and I'm mad. It's crazy how, like, even though you're old and it's still, like, really tough.
But I think it's, like, that whole thing. And a lot of us, as we have kids and you grow up, you know, you get out of doing physical sport. And it's amazing how quick you lose it, right? But if you kept doing it, there's no reason you can't do it till you're 80.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason you can't do anything to you. Surfing. I think, as you said, Charles, like, the contact sports, like rugby, soccer particularly, because you're sliding and stretching and, you know, kicking, you know, like those probably high impact, high movement sports are going to need a lot more injuries. But jiu-jitsu, you can slow down to your pace. You can actually, you know, I think, and that's one of the, I think one of the things that we, because Bruno Alves at Crow's Nest a stutter in an over 40s class. So
yeah, that's pretty interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
And I think that, because I've got so many people my age like saying, oh, I should have done it.
Yeah.
So do it now.
Yeah, maybe some of them, they hesitate a little bit to do it because they don't want to train for young people. And that the idea of over 40 classes is pretty good.
That's it. You know, pretty good. But I think, too, like, if you're over 40, if you're 50, you're probably kids are growing up, you're looking for a new interest. Yeah. You know, you're going to hang out with people the same age. Yeah. It's like doing, I don't know, what else do you do when you're 50? Lawn bowls,
yeah.
I
think, there's this thing, you know, when you over 40s and then 50, to start something is way harder. But, like, maybe, I don't believe it's that this way, you know. You just need to really find something that you're interested in. Like, it's never late to learn something new, you know.
100%.
And then you have to, is a way to stimulate your brain, and then, you know, whatever you like, and you just stimulate your brain, and then that's going to benefit you somehow, you know.
100%, and like you doing now with the no-gi, mate, a lot of the techniques, particularly even that head arm choke that you do, that's a very, very, I know it's old, but it's new as well, right, yeah. In this no-gi game, right? And we were talking about last night, actually. You know, always learning is such invigorating for people,
yeah.
Particularly if they're into a sport or a music, you know, if they're music or they're learning something. It actually, it's the fountain of youth. It keeps you cognating and interested and, you know, learning is an amazing thing,
yeah.
You know.
If you spark that little excitement of to learn something, that I think that's the key. Like.
So Charles, you know, since you've come to Australia, you've obviously, you had a pretty major injury, which is your knee. You know, I remember when you came here, you were a little bit worried about your level dropping off because you weren't going to get the exposure to the best guys in the world because, you know, you're obviously training with Hodger and you had access to the European Championships and all that sort of stuff. How do you think it's going so far? I don't think it's dropped off too much, do you?
Yeah, like that was, of course, that was my concern because I was lucky enough to always be around like good guys. But those good guys, I always heard that, like, for example, Roger and then Braulio, they went to UK at such a young age, and then they only had themselves far away from each other, like 2 hours away, so they could train. They couldn't train with each other every day. So they end up like competing in the worlds and all the biggest tournament and succeeding, you know. So I always heard from them, is really the way how you train. So I always had that thing, but I never faced the experience to be by myself in a place that we don't have like many good training partners. But I always had this back in my mind because, man, if they did it, you know, I can do as well. I just need to come from inside and then do this smartest train I can do. And I think that's what happened. Now I'm following my own path. You know, I'm not under the wings.
Under the wings.
Yeah, under the wings because I was lucky enough to be under the wings for such a long time. It's been a different path, and then finding myself and then trying to learn by myself a lot of stuff and do my own study. But of course, come from this stuff that I heard from them, like it's still possible. No?
You don't have to answer this question, but was there a technique you showed Roger that you didn't know?
For Roger? Yeah, many stuff.
And he's quite humble and he just goes,
no,
wow, show me that.
Yeah, like what happened, a lot of fundamentals of the techniques come from what he already knows, but I have to adapt a lot of stuff for my body type. So I have shown him a lot of stuff, and then we develop a lot of stuff as well because got to the point, we trained together for so many years, stuff that he was doing and everybody like didn't know, like easily in me or in Brawley anymore, because we already knew how to defend. Duff forced him a lot how to improve, even though he retired. He retired, but he had that desire to keep learning jiu-jitsu, you know. Like, so every time we put some barrier on a technique that he was trying to do, you know, like, and couple days later he was okay, coming something like different. And I was back and forth, you know, he was doing that and I was doing that as well, and then that was this personal challenge between us, but natural, and then it's good for the evolution, you know. Like,
100%. I think one of the things I remember when jiu-jitsu first came in Australia, like in the 90s, was it was like no one would train with each other because, like, oh, yeah, don't tell them the technique, like, you know, yeah, like, yeah. Wasn't it true?
Yeah.
You don't train with that gym, you don't swap. But now everybody's realised, and you realise when you train, if you teach someone something, they're going to put pressure on that thing that you've just taught them, and then you're going to work something else on top of that. Yeah. It just doesn't stop.
Yeah.
And it actually helps you when someone, like, I show Troy stuff all the time, and as soon as he does it to me, I've got to work some other way how to get him, because he knows what I'm doing to him, you know? Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I had the same conversation with Braulio before I come back to Australia, and then he was saying, like, everything what happened on his life, like, at some point, the stuff just happened when he started, like, share everything he got, like, every new thing he learned, and he was, like, putting everything out and share it for everyone. When he did that, you know, he was doing that, but in a genuine way. It wasn't
not expecting anything back.
I think when you do that, it's a really, really truth, like, things happen, you know, like, and then I think the benefit for him to been doing that, like, sharing everything, even though, like, yeah, like, he was learning so much from this, and then even a new thing he just learned, and he was, like, sharing with Roger. The guy gave him so much hard time through his career and training stuff. He was sharing with him, but, like, he learned something out of this, you know. Like, he was a genuine, very genuine guy, like, helping everyone on the mat. And then I was lucky enough to be around them, and then through my process of learning how to be a good instructor, I could see that come from him.
That's it.
His very genuine way to help every single one, and, like, not hiding it. Even that guy giving him a hard time, he was just deliver everything, you know, like. And then
that's the truest statement. Yeah. As you're developing, is that whole thing, you're trying to hide stuff, and it's like some magic. It's like, you know, it's not, because it's just like this. When you do the right thing and you tell everybody everything, and you're not trying to be some little sneak with the little tricks.
Yeah. It's not only in jiu-jitsu. I think in anything in life, every time you help someone, you feel good, and then that's the purpose, you know, the purpose of one of the biggest purpose in life, you know, you help and then you feel that good feeling. And I think in every aspect, you know, it could be in sport and anything. Every time you help, you feel good. That's what we do. That's why I say being a jiu-jitsu instructor as well. Like, we help so many people with issues in general.
Yeah, that's
like,
right,
100%. People with mental health, like, they're not part of anything. They're not part of any community. Like, they come to jiu-jitsu, and then you see in a couple months they're changing. You know, that makes you feel really good. So many people came to jiu-jitsu academy, you know, like, and it came in one of my classes. They couldn't even speak around a lot of people. And then a couple months later, they are, like, hanging out, like, making jokes, and then, you know, like...
Charles, we've got this guy, Richard, who trains at Maroubra, and he's got really bad autism.
I remember that bloke.
Oh, mate, you should see him now. You should see him now. He does forward rolls, back rolls, hip escapes. He wrestles. Mate, you've got no idea, but...
And he has his favourites too.
Does he?
But the beauty of him, he loves me. He wants to roll with me all the time.
Yeah.
Did he call you out?
All the time. And I go, Richard, you can't say that. I'm the instructor. You've got to wait your turn. You know, he's going, I want to fight you. I go, you can't. Just stand. Yeah. And I'll jump on him. But he loves the community. He comes and has a laugh. And he's...
His entire life, everyone that be around, only his family, family would be able to handle him. But anybody else, like, I see, recognize he's an autism. Okay.
That's
so, like,
it.
Yeah.
And then he goes to a place and he feels everyone, like, give him something back. Yeah. You know,
and I jump on top of him and I squash him, and can't make take the breath out of him, but he loves it, and because it's interaction, and he, you know, and I
usually people with autism they don't like
mate, I'm telling you that I have seen this massive metamorphosis of him in development of movement, of him walking up straighter, like his core must be stronger. Oh, it might be his confidence, but like he's got his head up now. Yeah. He's actually walks in. He's actually, mate. There's a very funny personality hidden in there as well.
Yeah.
Like he's got a good sense of humour. Never saw it.
Yeah.
There's these things that
stuff that he discovered like inside the Jiu-Jitsu kind of, maybe.
Maybe, but I mean, maybe it was there, but we brought it out. I don't know, but I'm just saying, I can't believe he's doing the warm ups with everybody where he couldn't even do them before. Yeah. Like he could hardly even walk. It's insane the difference it's made to him.
Hey, Charles, is teaching a passion of yours, or is it just a means to an end? Is teaching sort of your ultimate goal?
No, teaching is definitely one of my passions. You know, like it's included for Jiu-Jitsu package. You know, like I just mentioned, help people, make me feel good. You know, and helping people doing Jiu-Jitsu, like it's just a double way to fulfill my passion. You know. Definitely is my passion as well.
So how would you describe your methods of teaching? Do you think they differ from other people, other instructors?
I don't know. Maybe in a way of really care about the student. I think it doesn't matter where I'm going to go teach. The seminars that I teach around Europe, I get really good feedback from people because what they say, I really make sure they are learning. You know, like I believe a lot of instructors when they get such a long schedule of teaching many classes, get to the point they're just an automatic. They're just teaching techniques for the sake of teach, but they don't really care like if the student are actually learning. You know, like and then I never got myself in this type of like a mode of just teaching, and then see someone like struggling in the corner. I'm too tired. Like my body automatically goes there, and I have to teach them. Like, I have to be on a class. I have to be on. You know, like if I'm not, like I feel bad. I feel bad about myself.
You're constantly picking stuff up. Like tonight, you're like, don't grab the foot. Grab the pants.
Yeah. How many times? Is it come naturally? How many times people make the grip and then the palm is down and I say palm up?
Yeah.
We have been working the same technique for weeks, and then people still making the same mistake. Yeah. And then I always gonna keep saying the same thing because it's there. You know, like I care. I want to see the student doing well, because he's doing well, he's gonna feel happy, and then that energy. In an environment like change, when everyone's feel they are learning, like the environment change, you know. Yeah.
You know, I find your teaching incredible because it's the same thing you do, you know, Delaheva, and then you're like,
you're very kind.
How many Delahevas have I done? But then weeks later, you're like, oh fuck, I know why it is, because it's just become part of my muscle memory now, so it's solid.
Yeah,
and now people at Zetland are starting to go, I know why he's doing this fucking, you know, he'll do 3 weeks of Delahevas, he'll do, you know.
Because there's no point I'll be teaching one technique every day or one tech. If I feel the group is not, it's not catching up, and like, there's that a little bit of elementals of you trying to perfect, you know. You want to be perfectionism. Like, if they say that they're not catching up, like, we do again. We do another week, and then that's fine for me. Keep showing the same technique over and over, and show you all the details over and over, until everyone catch it. You know?
Yeah, but I think everyone's clicked on now. They're like, "Oh my god, I know what he's the madness of thought is here."
Yeah,
it's just he's taught it into us, so it just comes so naturally.
And it's better to know one technique really well than 50 techniques, you know, little bits and pieces of everything.
Yeah.
10 different things in a class.
Yeah. It's a cycle. You know, Jiu-Jitsu is a cycle. You have that period that you did so much Delahiva, so much anything, and then we're not gonna do this Delahiva for a couple months.
Yeah.
So what do you do, Charles? It's easy when you're teaching from white to blue, because they all don't know that much, right?
Yeah.
But what do you do when you've got a couple of blacks, you've got a couple of, like, 5 purples, you've got blues that are pushing the purples, and then you got, like, 10 whites, right? it's a diverse group that are all wanting different things, right? The Browns want to learn something new. The Blacks definitely want to... They're pretty cruisy because they're Blacks and they've got there, right? And the Purples always want to learn a new trick because they know De La Riva, they know this, they know that.
Yeah.
How do you manage that when you're teaching?
I don't think they change much, you know. Maybe just the techniques in general, like, you know, there's techniques more advanced, techniques more like basics. But
because there's always a basic version and an advanced version. So I don't know, I try and do a thing that's got both.
Yeah,
so you
yeah.
do that bit, that's the easy one, and then the more advanced ones, that you yeah. try it if you want. Is that?
Yeah, I can't, in a class with a different belt, it's hard you go too advanced, you know, but what happens if someone has a particular question at the end of the class that they're going to work on, you know, we're going to go through your, you know, it's a very, very, like, it's hard to please everyone in a class all the time, every day, you know, like, so, yeah, you're trying to work on something that are going to be useful for everyone, but at the end of the class, if that guy has a particular question that is going to benefit on his game, okay, I'm going to help him on that.
And how do you think, you know, you're going to open your own gym and people are going to come and train with you because of who you are and that?
I hope so.
They will. But then this is my question. This is the jagged end of the spear. Then they get someone else who's just the world champion and they start to... And we've seen it with other people we all know. And how do you think you're going to cope with that sort of stuff? Because we all get older. We all become redundant.
Yeah.
There's always someone better and faster and there's always going to happen, right?
Yeah.
How do you think you'll handle that?
You know what? That's something that I think a lot as well. And then I have friends. They are like... They got many titles. They are getting older. And they don't wanna slow down, you know. They wanna keep being on a mat because they don't trust another people taking the class. And then this person don't do the way how he does, you know.
Yeah,
what
that's
I
mean? It.
And I think that I don't think that's healthy because it gets to the point, you know, you start getting older and then you have family, you have all the priorities, and then you don't wanna pull back because you don't trust someone. Guess the point's not, you know, when are you going to stop them?
So where's the humility in it, right? When do you go, I'm stepping back, someone else has got to take the mantle,
well,
you know?
Yeah, well, I think it's the perfect way to get away with that would be you prepare someone, like someone starting you with you white to black, so you know the person very well, and like if that person will be really going to be capable to run your school. But it's out of your control, you know. It's not something that you really, you know.
It's a very universal thing. Yeah. That's why I asked the question. Cause, yeah. You know, it's so fickle. Like you get loyal people, and then you get people that are so disloyal.
Yeah.
That they'll drop you at the drop of a hat to go and train somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's
does happen. And that happens. And imagine you put so much effort preparing the person to be your instructor, the person that you're gonna trust. But
like catcher.
Yeah, eventually this person he wants to do their own thing as well, and they're gonna leave you, you know, like. But I still think the effort you should put to prepare someone still has to be there, and it's gonna be up to them to decide if they're gonna stay with you or leave.
But I still think too, Charles, it's not what you do on the mat too. You know, it's what you do off the mat.
100%.
You know, 100%. And it's about the relationship you're building through jiu-jitsu again. Yeah, no, but I think it's those loyalties are not just built by technique. They're built off the mat.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important with gyms to have regular social outings and get to know each other outside the gym.
That's such a good point because, jiu-jitsu include this whole thing, you know, like, it's the community as well outside the mat, you know, like it's not just training and, you know, as you finish training, you have the catch up, you know, finish training, the jokes, that's all included, you know. Imagine that person that trained work 9 to 5 and then finish training, go home, you know, like, and then don't have that
friendly.
That's it, the banter.
Yeah.
Hey, Charles, so you're a friendly cat. What does it take to bring your mood down? So, I've never seen you in a bad mood. And you know everyone's name. That's what's so good. That's what's so good about your classes.
Do you really think I know everybody's name?
You seem to know everyone's name.
Well,
and you go around, you have a really friendly vibe.
Look, he likes you, all right?
You likes everybody.
You're going to have to keep rapping his...
Don't want to get off his prong.
Johnny's good at doing that.
Johnny's good too. Yeah, Johnny makes you feel like a king.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm terrible. I'm terrible with names.
But you do make people feel very welcome, and you always seem to be in a really good mood. Not everyone seems to be in a good mood.
Because when I step on a mat, like, it's my happy place, you know? And then when I step outside the mat, I joy.
Fuck off.
Yeah, that's another thing that I learned with friends as well, watching them. My process of learn how to be a good instructor. This particular friend of mine, this guy's personal life was horrible. And back in the time, like, but every time he was stepping on the mat to teach, he was like, he's friend with everyone, helping everyone. You know, always, and I thought, man, that's a good
game face. Just game face.
But he wasn't faking. It's real. He step on the mat like all the problem goes. He's concentrating and super excited to teach the techniques for everyone, to help everyone on the mat.
100%.
And you know, like that thing we're talking about, the helping, you know, like the helping thing was like taking over, and he transformed. He just a different person, like super charisma. And then when he step out, like he all the problems, all getting the phone, and oh my god, I have to resolve that. But yeah.
So if you want to, train with Charles, it's every Tuesday, Thursday, 6 and 7?
6 and 7, 7 to 8.
Yeah.
Gi no gi.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Privates too.
And privates as well? Privates
too,
privates?
Yeah, I do.
Gives a discount too, don't you? I'm going to
hit you up, on Instagram?
Discounts
or through Troy at Zetland? Or? What's your handle?
Either way, like you can hit me on a DM on my Instagram.
So Charles Negromonti.
Charles Negromonti.
Yeah. He can't
pronounce my name. Let's just try again. Charles Negromonti.
Negromonti.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And through SJJ Instagram as well, Zetland.
Yeah.
Troy Boyhood.
And it does seem like everyone who does a lot of Charles's classes seems to be a level above. I noticed that when someone's doing lots of...
What I found was when Charles started, you had these white belts walking in and you're like, this guy won't last 2 weeks. And then I was doing once a week Charles class and then having trouble with like white belts, but I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have to step up my game. So now I put in the calendar, Tuesday, Thursdays, training and Saturday.
Anyway,
all right.
We're wrapping.
Here's Charles. That was amazing.
That was such a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Yeah, man.